Okay, so we're on the Gemara and Daf Chof Aleph Omed Aleph. And we're learning the sugya of the Issa for the king to marry too many wives, as the Torah says, lest they turn his heart away. So we're up to the Gemara on the last medium line. Just before the very wide lines, in the middle of that last line, the first word on the line is Ma'ani Mekayim. Says the Gemara, Hani Shmoina Asara Minolon. This number of 18, where do we get it from? There seems to be no remez in the Pasuk to that number. The Torah merely says, Lo Yarbe, do not have too many. So how does the Mishnah know that too many is 18? How do you know that it's 18? Says the Gemara, the Ksiv. It's a pasuk in Sefer Shmuel Beis. The Ksiv. Ve'yivoldu le'David bonim bechevrin. And children were born to David HaMelech in Chevrin. We'll see later on. The Gemara actually says that David HaMelech had no less than 400 children. Either way, here it says that David HaMelech had children in Chevron. Vayehi. Now we have to count very carefully over here. Bechoroi, his oldest was Amnon. He was called Amnon LaAchinoyam HaZiyisraelis, born to him by Achinoyam HaZiyisraelis. That's his first wife, Achinoyam. Umishnehu, the second one was Kol Eiv. La Avigail. Ashes Novel, HaKarmeli, we know the whole story. Avigail was married to Novel, etc., etc., etc. So, David HaMelech's second wife was Avigail. Vahashlishi, and the third was Avshalom ben Ma'achor. So, his third wife was Ma'achor. Vaharavia, and the fourth one was Adoniyahu ben Chagis. So, his fourth wife was Chagis. Vahamishi was Shephatiah. His fifth child was Shephatiah, the son of Avital, who was his fifth wife. And then Vahashishi was Yisraim le Eglah. So Eglah, we'll see soon in the Gemara who exactly Eglah was. The Gemara says it's actually Michal. But either way, Eglah was now the sixth wife. So if you make a cheshbon, clearly spelled out in that posse, the David HaMelech initially had six wives. And then it says, Eile Yoldu LeDavid Bechevrin. These Noshim, these of the wives, gave birth to children to David HaMelech in Chevrin. But there's six altogether. V'ka'omar le'Novi. And the Novi said to David HaMelech, Im Ma'at V'oisifo Lecha. If this is too little for you, if you think you don't have enough wives, you want to increase kohena the kohena, literally translated like this and like this. What does that mean, like this and like this? So remembering that he had six already, says the Gemara, kohena shis, the kohena is shis. When David HaMelech had six wives, and the Novi said, if you want to have more, you can have like this and like this. It means you can have another six, and then another six. That's what it means, Kohena, like these and like these. So you can have another group of six, and then a third group of six, in which case, Dehavelahu Temani Sri.
Rabbi.
Temani mean, as we very often know, the letter Tof can be replaced by a shin to convert Aramaic into Hebrew. So instead of Temani, it would be Shmoini, which obviously is eight. So Shmoina Sri is like Shmoina also. That's how we get the number 18. So the Novi was really telling David HaMelech, you have six wives. If you so desire, you can have like these in addition, that takes you to 12. And then again, like these, that takes you to 18.
I don't mean this is a joke, but what is the motivation to have 18 wives? She's supposed to have shalom bayis. He's supposed to have a good relationship with your wife. So how does this work? Like, what is behind this? To have more children? Like, what is behind the kedusha of this?
Well, who says you can't have shalom bayis with 1,000 wives?
It's
Rabbeinu
pretty
Gershom.
difficult to. I understand, but what is the kedusha behind? What is the Elokis behind having?
Nachum, I won't tell your wife that you raised your hand.
You could. That's fine. I'm not making a joke. I'm trying to be.
They're not telling you all.
What's the Elokis behind having? I want to have 18, 21. I mean, what is the Elokis behind that?
Gershom saw that in our generation, and that was almost 1,000 years ago, it's not possible for us. It's not a chatchila. But clearly, as far as the Torah is concerned, there's nothing wrong with it. You can have perfectly healthy shalom bayis with 1,000 wives as well. It might cost you a lot in buying Erev Shabbos flowers, but so be it.
But what's behind it? With have more children?
Why not? I'm not sure if it needs to be explained. Why should it not be? Well, what's the kashya? As the Torah is concerned, you can marry 1,000,000 wives. Rabbeinu Gershom made a takana, which, by the way, Rabbeinu Gershom's takana was not necessarily accepted in all parts of Klal Yisrael. There are ad hayoyim hazeh, certain sects in Klal Yisrael, not many, if I'm not mistaken, amongst the Teimanim and maybe some others, who, as far as they're concerned, it is acceptable to marry more than one wife.
Do you think just like they used to say, if we understood how much the tithe of Avodah Zarah was back in the day, we would understand why Hashem had to take it off? We can't even understand. Do you think that maybe because these takanas were made and our culture has changed, that we really don't understand what it was like to, so we don't
100%.
even think about, maybe that's the issue?
Therefore, as far as we're concerned, and we're correct, that in nowadays day and age, we would not be able to maintain a Jewish home the way the Torah writes it with more than one wife. By the way, it happens to be lahavdil elef avdolos. In a lot of countries, if I'm not mistaken, it's actually illegal to marry two wives. Nothing to do with halacha. But either way,
Well,
we
it
are
becomes
talking about halacha. Sorry?
Malchus, Dine, in the Malchus.
It's not relevant to us because it's anyway asa lahalacha in accordance with the takana of Rabbeinu Gershom. As I mentioned, there are some, not most, most do adhere to Rabbeinu Gershom. There are some sections of Klal Yisrael that never accepted the takana of Rabbeinu Gershom. Either way, so Dovid HaMelech has six wives, and he's told by the Navi, if you want to increase, you can have like these, and then like these again, it takes you to 18. Says the Gemara on the fourth wide line, Maskiv lo Ravina. So Ravina asks the Kasha, how do you know to translate the pasuk like that? Emo kehena means tarati sri. How do you know that kehena means like these, you add six? Maybe means kehena like these means you get to 12, so it means you can add 12. And then when it says the kehena, maybe means you double it again and you get to esrim v'arba. So how do you know kehena means? You increase six and then you increase another six. Maybe kehena means if you have six now, so you can have that again, that'll take you to 12. And then you can double that as well and take you to 24. So how do you know it's only 18? How do you know that's the correct translation of the pasuk? Again, Maskiv lo Ravina, Eimar Kehena is Tarat Yisri. Maybe Kehena means you go up to 12, because it means like you have now, you can have again. But then what will you have then? You'll have 12. So if he says, and you can have that again, means you can have another 12. The Kehena is Esrim Va'arba. So who told you that the translation is 18? Maybe it actually gets you to a number of 24. Not only that, says the Gemara, Tanya Nami Hochi, and indeed we've learnt as such in a Braisa. There is actually an opinion in the Braisa that says so. Why? What does it say? Tani nami hochi, loy, yarbe, loy, noshim, yoisa, me arboim, vashmoino. This is now a third opinion. The Braisa says he shouldn't marry more than 48 wives. So again, we suggested that a kahina means 18. Moses says, how do you know? Maybe you take six, you double it, you get to 12, you double it again, you get 24. There is an opinion that says actually 48.
That's with the bulb. I think you left out a line.
Did I lose that line? Yes, sorry, quite right. I missed that line. Tanya Nami Hochi. Lo yar beloi noshim yoise me estrim va'araba. Indeed, the Brisa says you should not marry more than 24. So you see that the Brisa clearly maintains that the correct calculation is not 18, but rather 24. Not only that, the Brisa now says you could get to 48. Ulaman d'dorish vav arboim v'shmoina. What does that mean? We know that the letter vav sometimes is used for a drosha. So according to one opinion, it says, when it says that the Navi told him you can marry Koheno V, Koheno, that Vav is extra because he could have just said you can marry Koheno Koheno. So the Vav tells me take everything that you have and double it once again. So again, you begin with six, you double it, you get to 12, you double it again, the second Koheno, you get to 24, and then the Vav says double it again, you get to 48. Says the Gemara, Tanya Nami Hochi, and we have another brisa as well. Lo yar beloi noshim yoise me'arboim v'shmoina. Do not marry more than 48. So either way, this brisa seems to be suggesting, or these two brisas, that the correct calculation is not 18. It's either 24, and if you darshan in the vav, you get to 48. But nobody in the brisa mentioned 18. Says the Gemara, Vatana Didon, my time. So what about our opinion that says 18? How does he darshan the psukim? Says the Gemara, Makish Kehena, quote unquote, Basra. The second Kehena, he must be compared, the Kehena Kamo to the first Kehena. Ma Kehena Kamo, just like the first Kehena is Shis. Af Kehena Basra is also Shis. So in other words, he looks at the Pasuk completely differently. It's true that in the Braisa, how do they learn Kehena v'Kehena? That you can marry like this, means another six you get to 12, and then like that again, another 12. But our Braisa says, no, that's not the way you have to understand it. If it says Kehena twice, then those Kehenois both have to have the same translation. You've got to compare the two. And if the first Kehena meant six, then the second Kehena also meant six. So it's six plus six plus six, which is 18. So it turns out in the final analysis that our Mishnah that says that a king can only marry 18 wives is definitely not unanimously agreed upon. Some say it's 24 and some say it's 48. It all depends. It all revolves on one pasuk. How do I learn the Kehena of a Kehena Pasuk? The Brisa learns a Kehena of a Kehena, you keep doubling. And if you dash in the Vav, you double it again. Whereas our Brisa, our Mishnah says, no, you don't double anything. You just keep on adding six. Says the Gemara. V'ho havoi mechal. Don't we know, we've learned this in previous sugyas, that Dor HaMelech actually also married another wife called Michal Bas Shaul.
Gosh.
In this posset that mentions his six wives in Hebron, why is there no mention of Michal? The answer is, yes, there is. Omarav Eglo Zu Michal. When it says Eglo or Agola, which literally means a young calf, that is a reference to Michal. That is Michal. That was another name that she had. V'lomo nikro shmo agola. So if she's called Michal, why are we referring to her as agola? Why is she also called agola? The answer is shechaviva olov ka'agola. Because she was so precious to him, like a young calf. So Dovid HaMelech had a special chavivus, a special yachas to Michal, which is compared, interestingly, to a young calf, and that's why she's called Agola. V'chein hu oima, so too there's a pasuk in Shoftim and says, Lule charashtem be'eglosi. So if you look at Rashi by us, it's on the third narrow line. This is referring to Shimshon. And Rashi says, Shimshon kori lo le'ishtoi. How did Shimshon refer to his wife? As eglossi, as my young calf. Kishehi gidolohem chidosoi, when she told him the puzzle, which is not our subject. All the Gemara is bringing is as a proof that you see it's like a term of endearment. A term of endearment is to call one's wife a young calf, just as Shimshon did, so too Dovra Melech had a special chavivus for his wife and called her Egla, and that's why, even though her name was Michal, but she's referred to in his pasuk as Egla or Agola.
It's very interesting considering that David and Michal had that big to do with the when he was dancing in front of the Aaron and he told her, I'm not like your father and everything. It didn't seem like he was too happy with her.
We'll see. The Gemara discusses later. Okay. Says the Gemara. Here we now get stuck. Why? Because the Pasuk clearly told us that these are the children born to David and Melech from the following wives. Now, there is no mention of Michal in that Pasuk, but apparently when it says Agolo Eglo, that actually is a reference to Michal, which is another way of saying the Michal must have had children. Because it clearly says these are the children that were born to David HaMelech. And it mentions Eglo, who is in fact Michal, which means Michal's had children. Says the Gemara, what's going on? Umi Havu le Michal bni? Did Michal really have children? If you tell me that this Agola is in fact not Michal, it's a woman called Agola, fine. So Michal is not mentioned in this pasuk. But you're telling me that Michal is mentioned in this pasuk and she's being referred to by the word Agola, which means clearly you're telling me she had children. Is that really true? Voxi, but surely it says, Ula Michal Bashol. Loi hoya lo vlad ad yoy moisa. She never had a child until a dying day. Until the day she died, she never had children. So if she never had children until the day she died, how can you refer to a child that was born to her if in fact that she never had children? The answer is Omer of Chista. No. Ad yoy moisa loi hoya lo. But the Yoy Misa Moisa Havila. In other words, you misunderstood the Pasuk. When it says that she didn't have children until her dying day, it means only until that day. But on that day, indeed she did have children, or at least a child. In other words, there's always two ways you can understand that phrase. How do you translate the phrase? She didn't have a child until her dying day. So either it's until means an inclusive, or it's exclusive. And that's what the Gemara is saying. So she didn't have any children until that day. That means prior to that day. But on that day, she did have a child. Says the Gemara, Mechti. There's something still difficult that we need to understand. Bonim heicha kochoshiv lehu bechevroim ve'ilu ma'ase de Michal b'Yerushalayim haver. It clearly says in this pasuk that these are the children born to David HaMelech in Yerushalayim, in Chevron, excuse me. And you're telling me that one of the noshim mentioned in this pasuk, referred to as Agola, is in fact Michal. Well, I'm sorry to say, the whole maisa with Michal marrying Michal did not take place in Hebron at all. It actually took place in Yerushalayim. So how can you have a pasuk that says that Egla, which is a reference to Michal, had children in Hebron? It's not true. Why is it not true? Diksiv, and this is the pasuk of Larry that you just mentioned. Because it's mentioned, Michal Bashol, Nishkefa Ba'ad HaChaloin, and Michal Bashol was looking from the window. Vateres Hamelech, and she saw the king, meaning David Hamelech, Hamelech David, Mephazes, Umecharcher, Ifnei Hashem, saw him dancing wildly in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu with the Sefer Torah, Vatives, and she considered it a disgrace and an embarrassment. And that story all happened in Yerushalayim. So what is this posse referring to when it talks about the children that Egla, i.e. Michal, had in Hebron? What happened in Hebron? What happened in Yerushalayim? Says the Gemara, a very strange word. Rabbi Yosef, I'm curious, how do they translate it with you? Says the Gemara, the Omar Rav Yehuda, the Itamer of Yosef, Shoklusa Michal Mitarfuso. How do they translate?
Received her due.
Hmm?
Michal received her due.
Meaning as a punishment.
Yeah, by becoming barren, as they added. So I think the Mitarfuso is her due.
So this is
what she deserved.
Michal Bas Shaul was considered, on her very high madriga, to have spoken or related to David HaMelech in a disrespectful fashion. And as a result, she never had children. So therefore, Rabbi Yosef, again, how do they explain the question? Is the question about the geography of Hebron versus Yerushalayim? Or is the question about whether Bechalal she had children or not?
I think, as I understood it, it's, the article is stating it's whether she had children or not.
Correct.
So I think they're going to go on to see.
That's quite clear in the Gemara's answer. So again, how do they translate the previous line about Hebron and Yerushalayim? Bonim Heicha Kochashu LeBechevron. How do...
That he had them in Hebron.
Right.
And they took the... there's a previous, contradiction. What was it? I don't know something to do. No, all the contradictions are relating to whether she had children or not.
Right. So how do they translate when it says the ilu maisa de Michal b'Yerushalayim have? Is that a question or is that a fact?
Michal. Yes.
In Yerushalayim, when it says about Yerushalayim, is that a question or is that a statement?
It's a statement that the previous verse is talking about Hebron, and that's before David moved to Yerushalayim.
Very good. So you've answered my question. In other words, the Gemara was not asking a question of did this happen in Hebron or did this happen in Yerushalayim? No. The Gemara is just pointing out just the facts that even though the Pasuk is referring to Hebron, but afterwards, Michal and the story happened in Yerushalayim. That's not what's bothering the Gemara. What's bothering the Gemara is that once Michal commented on the way that David HaMelech was dancing, and it was considered... And it was considered to be on her level, disrespectful, for which she had to be punished. And what was the punishment? That she never had children. Well, if that's the case, it's a little bit difficult to translate that posuk as she never had children until her dying day. But on her dying day, she did have a child. Well, where was the punishment then? If the punishment was you're not going to have children, then surely that means you're never going to have children. But if you're translating that when it says until her dying day, but in fact on her dying day she did have a child, so where's the punishment? Elo, says the Gemara, perhaps we can switch it completely and turn it around 180 degrees. Rather, Ema, ad oisei maisa hoyolo, but mikan ve'elech loy hoyolo. So the exact opposite of what we said before. We said before that she never had children, but on her last day of her life, she did. Now we're saying, no, it's the exact opposite. Prior to this story with David HaMelech, she had children. Then came the story with David HaMelech, for which she was punished. And what was the punishment? The punishment was, from now on, she didn't have any children. Such that when it says in the Pasuk that she didn't have any children until her dying day, we don't translate anymore like we said before, that until her dying day, but on her dying day she did. No. From this Maisa and onwards, she never had children up to and including her dying day. What was the question? The question was, yeah, but we had a Pasuk that said previously that Michal did have children. It's true. Those children were born prior to the Maisa of David HaMelech. So it turns out, therefore, we have a machloikas. When exactly did Michal have children? According to the first opinion, there were no children until the dying day of her life. According to the second opinion, no. After the Maisa of David HaMelech, she never had children at all the way up to and including her dying day. Any children that she had was prior to the story of David HaMelech.
Rabbi, I'm under the impression when I remember about Tanakh that after that incident, David and Michal were estranged. So it's not only that she was cursed to not become Arayon. I don't think they were together again. I think he was so upset, you know, because he even said to her, you know, like, I'm not your father. And so I think they were from that point on.
I don't remember such a thing in the Psukim, because the Gemara clearly points out, according to the first opinion at least, that she actually had children on her last day from him. Either way, we have a machlik. So the bottom line is that Michal definitely had children. It's a mafurish posuk. Again, it's not absolutely explicit because Michal's name is actually not mentioned in that posuk. Rather, it's mentioned the name Eglo or Agola. Apparently, that's a reference to Michal. The question is only, at what point of her life did she have children? Did she have children on her last day, the last day, on the day that she died? Or did she have children prior to the Maisa of David HaMelech? But following that Maisa, she never had children all the way up to and including her dying day. That is Machlokes. Now we're going to be introduced to a new concept. Says the Gemara, Vahoksiv, Vayikach, David, Oid, Pilagshim, Venoshim, Beyerushalayim. We have a pasuk that says, and David took further Pilagshim, which I think officially is always translated as concubines, Venoshim, and he took additional wives in Yerushalayim. So what's going on? If he's only allowed to marry 18 wives, why is he now taking more wives over the limit of 18? The answer is it wasn't. Those were the additional wives that took him to 18. Says the Gemara, L'maluyo yishmoina asa. Those are the ones who took him to the count of 18. So initially it was six. The Navi said you can marry Kohena v'Kohena. So he did, and he married additional wives in Yerushalayim, not in addition to the 18, but rather in addition to the six that got him to the 18. Now, it clearly says that in addition to marrying additional wives, he also had pilagshim, concubines. What is that? Says the Gemara, my noshim umay pilagshim. What is an isha? What is a pelegesh? So the Emma says it's a whole sugya, mainly not over here. It's mainly, if I'm not mistaken, Masechus Kiddushin. But there exists the concept of a woman who is essentially not the wife, but nonetheless he lives with her. So what's the definition of a wife? What's the definition of a pilegesh? That's the Gemara's question. My noshim or my pilagshim omar v'yudomar av. Noshim b'ksuba uba kiddushin. When you take a married wife, well, that needs an official process to bring her in, which is called kiddushin. That needs another process to take her out, and that's called ksuba or a get. For the moment, a ksuba. So when he marries her, the kiddushin, he also has to be mischayev, he has to undertake all of the obligations which are mentioned in the Ksuba, which, as we know, refer both to his marital obligations whilst married and also to any financial obligations if and when he would divorce her. So that is the definition of an isha, i.e. a wife. He marries her b'kiddushin, and there's also this commitment called the ksuba. However, upilagshim is b'loy ksuba u'b'loy kiddushin. It's a woman that he's living with without kiddushin. She's not a fully fledged wife, and therefore there is no chiv of a ksuba either. And David HaMelech may have well married other pilagshim, but l'chayra, when the Torah says he mustn't marry too many wives, i.e. 18, that's referring to noshim, means b'kiddushin u'b'ksuba. But pilagshim is a totally different cheshbon. Okay, I have to hold it over here. As I mentioned, pilagshim, although it's a new concept, but it's not discussed by Arichas over here, so we'll leave it as that. And Be'ezus Hashem, we'll continue tomorrow morning, all being well.